tonight's call for the Triathlon Summit. And tonight's speaker is Danny Dreyer. And Danny Dreyer is the creator of Qi Running and Qi Walking. Both are revolutionary forms of moving that blend subtle inner focuses of Tai Chi with running and walking. His work is based on his study of Tai Chi master Zhu. How do you pronounce that last name?
Shu, just like you wear Shu, you know?
X-U, yep.
Shu.
Shu, and internationally renowned master speaker Zhu. And his 35 years of experience of running, racing, ultra marathons, and coaching people in intelligent movement. He has taught thousands of people the Qi running and Qi walking techniques with profound results. Danny has been featured speaker at the prestigious Boston, Chicago, San Francisco, Los Angeles, and San Diego marathons. I could keep going on and on about all of his accomplishments. He can walk the walk and talk the talk. So with that, I'm going to welcome Danny Dreyer to the call. Danny, how are you?
Good, Kerry. Nice to be on.
Good, good. With that, let's start with the first question, and that is, what exactly is Qi running?
Qi running basically is the combination of what you just listed. It's basically what I learned out of my 35 years of running. And 10 of that was probably, most of 10 of that was for ultra running. So I learned, brought a lot out of ultra running and how to run efficiently and, you know, how to keep from getting hurt. And then I combined all my efficiency stuff with that, with what I've learned from my practice of Tai Chi. And so basically Tai Chi, the principles that make Tai Chi such a great martial art is that it's all based in non-muscle usage. It's all about how to move your body by either directing your energy or aligning your body correctly. And it's a very fascinating way to move the body. And when you start combining that with running, you end up with quite an efficient and good working way to move your body.
Okay, interesting. So how can triathletes then benefit with Qi running?
Well, basically, there's a number of ways. A big part of what I'm trying to teach people is how to not use your legs for propulsion. Okay, so that's kind of a radical idea, to say the least, for most people. Because they think, you know, that legs are really the be-all and end-all in running. Well, they're not. And if you can use, you know, the pull of gravity, which, you know, we do a lot of using the lean, so whenever you're running, your whole entire body is falling forward. And once you're not vertical, then really the pull of gravity starts assisting you in moving your body forward. So the more you can cooperate and balance your body into this pull of gravity, the less you have to use your legs for propulsion. Really, then your legs are just used for momentary support between strides. Really, what's moving you down the road is the fact that you're falling forward. And that's how all of us ran when we were kids. Everybody. You watch any kids run, you'll see they're all falling forward. And I ask my running classes all the time, how many people in this room never fell down while they were running as a kid? And so far, I haven't had anybody raise their hand. So, you know, everybody ran falling forward. So for triathletes, when you get off the bike, if you can train yourself to use your legs less and less and less, then when you get off the bike, it's not a big deal to get off and run. Because you've just, you know, you just spent your legs on the bike leg, and so you want to have an alternative way to, you know, propel your body when you get off the bike besides using your legs. So it's really efficient for triathletes. That's why a lot of triathletes really love this technique, because it's not their most feared leg anymore, you know. The other thing is that if you're learning how to run with your body in a highly efficient way, then there's way less recovery time after your workouts because you're not really, you know, burning muscle. You're not really breaking down muscle tissue and having to recover again if you're not really using that much muscle to run with. And so there's less recovery time. So with triathletes, you can do all your bricks and all your training and stuff and not have to spend time recovering after long runs. So you don't have to cut back on your bike or your swim because you had a tough run one day because you don't have tough runs. You know, you learn the technique it takes to run efficiently, but you don't have to build lots of muscles to do the running. Okay, and another part of that is that really you can crank the bike leg a lot harder. And I've had a lot of triathletes come to me and say, you know, with this new running technique, I can really fly on the bike. And I used to have to, like, hold back, you know, really be careful about how much I used my legs. So it does make the last leg of the triathlon a much more fun event.
yeah, for sure. A few weeks ago, we had Dr. Nicholas Romanoff, and he did the pose technique, and some of the listeners were asking, you know, what's basically the difference between what you teach and what he teaches. So what's your take on that?
Well, when I caught that interview, and it was really nice to listen to him talk and hear how his approach to running is. And it's interesting because both the techniques use the lean, right? So he's an engineer, a scientist, and he understands the physics of if you're falling, you know, that's a more efficient way to move your body. That is the only similarity between the two techniques. And many people will say, oh, they're exactly the same. One's just a knockoff of the other, but it's really not true. basically, the qi running being based in Tai Chi means that Tai Chi is all, like I said, it's based in non-muscle usage, okay? And the muscles that you do use are all of the core muscles. And the nature of Tai Chi, it's set up in the human body to where if you're moving from your center, then the further away you get from your center, the less you use that particular part of your body. So as you get further from your core, you use the subsequent parts less and less because obviously they get smaller as you get further from the core. Where this is different from the pose technique is that he has his runners running on their forefoot, landing with a forefoot strike. And whenever you're on your forefoot, you're expending more energy. You're using muscles. You know, there's no way around it. In fact, you're sitting down right now. I would like to have you and everyone out there in ether land stand up.
Okay, I'm standing. Go for it.
Stand up. Okay,
yeah,
now get up on the ball. Now get up on the balls of your feet.
Sure. Like on my toes.
Which muscles are firing right now?
Definitely my calves more than anything.
Okay, and then also if you look on the front side of your leg, your shins.
Right.
Right, you can feel them firing. Okay, stand there for the next 3 hours, okay? This is
I'm all set.
Example of what
I'm
you
good.
Would be doing if you were running a marathon.
Yeah.
Okay, so it increases the load to your lower leg. Running on the forefoot. So I based all of my running technique on energy efficiency and injury prevention. Those two big themes run through everything in qi running. The themes that seem to run through the pose technique are speed. Any other theme, I don't know if there's any other theme, it's speed, you know. It's not efficiency because it couldn't be if you're expending more energy to, you know, yeah, you're using less muscle, certain of your muscle power because gravity is pulling you forward. But if your support stance is always firing those lower leg muscles, then you're expending energy. It's costing you fuel. Okay. Qi running lands with a midfoot strike, and basically your support, when you're in the support phase, your structure is what's holding you up. There are, you know, very few muscles having to do that job. So that takes all the work away from the lower legs. And the lower leg muscles are where most of running injuries happen. Shin splints, calf pulls, Achilles tendon pulls, plantar fasciitis, you name it. You know, all of those injuries, the major debilitating injuries happen in the lower leg. So the last thing I want to do is have runners up on their forefoot, you know, supporting their entire body weight with the smallest muscle group in their leg. Okay? So it just seems inefficient to me. A lot of the difference between the pose and the qi running technique is that I've based all of what I've learned on pure experience. It doesn't necessarily come from science. I use scientists to back up what I've figured out, but it's not based on science, and then I go out and see if it works. You know, I'm not just like a pure scientific person. So, you know, the qi running is really based on body knowledge. So, you know, I've been running for so many years and tried so many things and run lots of ultras, 100 milers on down. And I know in my body what works efficiently, what I can do for speed, what I can do to rest when I'm running, what I can do in any kind of circumstance that pops up in front of me when I'm running. And with the pose technique, he doesn't go into all of those little variables, those little things that happen. Well, what if you get tired and you're doing the pose technique? What if you need to go up a hill? What if you, you know, what if you feel some kind of discomfort or pain? How do you manage your fuel? You know, with Qi running, we've really tried to approach it from such a holistic viewpoint that you're always, whenever you're moving, you're trying to take into consideration as many things as possible in your running. The internal part that's going on in your body, you're always sensing your body to see what's going on with it. You're responding to what's going on. And then you're also feeling how your body responds to the environmental challenges. You know, is there a hill? Well, how do you run differently up a hill? And how do you run differently down a hill? How do you run differently in a crosswind? How do you, you know, how do you run differently in the cold? And so, you know, Qi running, all of these little focuses that happen in the Qi running technique are designed to get people really sensitive to their body so they have the correct response to any condition. And then you really learn to master your body, you know. And that's the whole idea of being any kind of, you know, an athlete, is to really have mastery over your body. And it's not just mastery over a technique. It's mastery really over your body, because you can use that the rest of your life, and you don't just you don't just use it when you're running. See, that's the beauty of it. You know, so a lot of the focuses that are in Qi running, you can use all day long. You can use them when you're driving a car. You can use them when you're carrying groceries. They're not all specifically just designed for people to be faster runners. You know, it's how do you master your event. Okay, so if you're running Ironman, you know, Honolulu Ironman, Hawaii Ironman, you know, there's hills in there. How do you train specifically for that? How do you change your technique when you do that? So, you know, there's a lot of other differences. You know, the biggest difference, too, is that, you know, in Qi running, you rotate your pelvis. And what I mean by that is that as your legs swing, your pelvis rotates around a central axis. And so if your leg swings to the rear, your hip goes back with it, your whole pelvis rotates. That gives you extra stride length, okay?
Mm-hmm.
With Qi running, your cadence always stays the same, but your stride length is what changes. That kind of gives you like a set of gears, like a bicycle.
Right.
You know? So you keep your cadence always the same, but, you know, you just allow your stride to open up or shorten depending on if you, you know, need more speed or less speed, or if you're going up a hill, you shorten your stride. If you're going down a hill, you lengthen it. So there's all these adjustments and variables. And if you aren't able to, the idea is to be able to adjust to all the different variables with the least amount of energy expenditure. Okay. So, for instance, I'll give you one example, is that, you know, Mr. Romanoff was talking about, you know, he's got the three phases of pose technique, he said, are the pose, fall, and pull, right?
Right.
So you've got people landing on their forefoot and pulling their foot up as fast as they can, try to keep the least amount of contact with the ground as possible, which works if you want to be a very fast, short-distance runner. Works great for that, you know. But if you want to be an endurance runner where you're using the least amount of energy possible, then you don't want to be using a contraction of your muscles to pull that foot up underneath you. You want to really be using the recoil of your tendons. And if you allow your leg to swing and lengthen and your pelvis to rotate, you're actually loading a large amount of the myofascial tissue that connects all those muscles and tendons all together, and your legs end up being able to be moved by a recoil effect of the tendons and the myofascial tissue. That doesn't cost you fuel. So if I'm allowing my legs to stretch out behind me with my run, it's similar to how the Kenyans run. So if my stride opens up way behind me, that's stretching that hip flexor tendon. That's stretching my quadricep tendon. As soon as I let my leg off the ground, all of those tendons recoil and pull my leg forward. The tendon recoils and pulls it forward. I don't need to contract that giant quadricep muscle. I don't need to fuel it to get the job done. It's way more efficient. Okay, so the idea is you land midfoot, and you don't use any energy in your lower leg because you're when you land with a midfoot, there's very little muscle that really needs to be supporting your body because it's bones lined up.
Mm.
And then to move my legs, I'm using the recoil of my tendons. To move my body, I'm falling forward. So I'm trying to, like, really knock out muscle usage as much as possible. That's the whole idea.
All right. With that, you know, a lot of people realize that there's a lot of technique within swimming and things of that nature. But how is technique important in running?
Oh, my gosh. You can get, well, for instance, you can get faster without more exertion. You know, you could have technique. If you could have all the muscles in the world, you could do strength training from now till the cows come home. But if you have really strong legs, but your running is inefficient, if your technique isn't good, you know, if your body isn't moving in a nice, relaxed way, you'll never be as fast as somebody who has good technique and can also add on that strength when they need it. You know what I mean? And so technique is really the basis of, one, not getting injured, you know, because if your technique is bad, if you're landing hard, so, you know, let's say you're reaching with your legs, overstriding and heel striking, then every time you land, there's going to be the jolt of the road is going to travel up your foot, up your leg, you know, into your knees or your hips or whatever is your weak spot. And it's going to start wearing away your body. It might not do it when you're 18 years old. It might not even do it when you're 25. But if you start getting into your 30s, if you're running that way, you're going to start feeling it. So technique has everything to do with saving your body. If you want to be a runner for a lot of years, get your technique really clean, really smooth, and have the least amount of impact with the ground. Okay. Now, if you have a really clean technique, that means that there are, and you're really relaxed with it, that means if you're not holding any tension in your body, then your body can move much more freely. And if it can move more freely, then there's less resistance to motion, and you become a more efficient runner. See what I mean?
Yeah,
and
definitely.
If you're more efficient, like I said, you don't need as much recovery time. You don't need as much fuel. You don't need to have a real high VO2 max to, like, super oxygenate your muscles so that they will burn more fuel better. You go a whole different route, you know. When I talk about it's that she running is similar to the Kenyans, you look at the Kenyans, and they've done studies, these VO2 max studies of the long-distance Kenyan runners, and they have pretty, you know, pedestrian, so to speak, VO2 max numbers. They're not major guys in that area because they're efficient runners. They don't need to be, you know, fueling their muscles with a huge oxygen uptake. They're just not exerting that much, even at the speeds they're running. See?
Yeah. I've actually seen the studies on that too, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. All right. So how much of an improvement then can running technique make in, you know, making one faster?
It could probably add definitely a double-digit percentage points higher.
Really, yeah.
As far as making you faster. Oh, yeah. You know, like I just said, when you work on your technique, the idea, especially with chi running, is to really do as much as possible as relaxed as possible. Okay? So the idea is to be a relaxed runner, okay, at any speed. Okay? You know, and you see, you know, in the Olympics, you know, when the sportscaster is talking about the guy that wins a 100-meter dash, he goes, well, you know, that guy looks so relaxed. You know, it's the people that are the most relaxed that allow their energy to move through their body in a more unobstructed way. So your technique has everything to do with making you faster, because if you can be a much more relaxed runner, all of that fluidity in your body, all the motion in your body has no obstructions. There is no inertia. You know, there's nothing blocking the movement of body mass. And so technique has everything to do with how to move freely and smoothly and, you know, level along the ground and just, you know, real, no wasted motion. That's really the best way to put it. The better your technique is, the less wasted motion you have. Less wasted motion you have, like I said, less fuel you need, less oxygen you need, less recovery you need, all that.
Good deal. We like that. That's good.
Yeah.
All right. What are the common mistakes that you see people make when they're running, and how can they fix them?
Well, probably one of the biggest mistakes is leading with their legs, overstriding. You know, people start reaching with their legs. That's the biggest problem I see people do. They think in order to run faster, you have to swing your leg forward. Okay. Well, whenever you swing your leg forward, here's the principle. You know, you want to cooperate with all with the forces that are acting on your body whenever you're running. In Tai Chi, you're always cooperating with forces. If somebody's throwing a punch at you, you go in the direction the punch is coming. You don't go against it, you know.
Mm.
Okay, so if you're running down the road, that means the road is coming at you, right?
Right.
Okay, so if you're a six-minute miler, there's a 10-mile-an-hour force coming at you. It's called the road, you know.
Yeah.
How do you deal with that force? If you're swinging your leg forward into that force, that's an incredible amount of force coming into your body. And it's if your foot is landing in front of you, like I said, leading with your leg, as soon as your foot lands in front of your center of mass, you're putting the brakes on. So why in the world would you want to run with the brakes on? And
right.
I would say 60% of the people I see out there are running with the brakes on. So the idea is, you know, with Qi running, whenever you're leaning forward, you're leaning with your whole body so that when your foot comes down on the ground, it is either under or slightly behind your center of mass. So that as your foot hits the ground, it's moving in a rearward direction, not swinging in a forward direction into that force. See what I mean? So
yeah.
Cooperating with that force of the road means that when your foot hits the ground, it's got to be going the same direction as the road, which is the other way that you're headed. Okay? So that's
mm-hmm.
the biggest one. The other, you know, mistake I see people making is over-reliance on their leg muscles and legs in general. There's another way, you know.
Mm.
There's another way to get by it, you know, without using so much leg muscle. Another huge mistake, poor pacing, you know. Everybody's so into, like, you know, zipping off at the start. And, you know, triathletes are better at it because you just learn. After a while, you just learn, you know. You just don't go out fast unless you want to die early, you know. But poor pacing is really a big deal. People at the start line just get so caught up with adrenaline, and they just want to, like, blast away, and it doesn't pay, you know. And other mistakes are a huge waste of energy is increasing your cadence as you increase your speed. And that's one thing that a lot of people aren't really that aware of. But, you know, if you increase your ground speed, and your cadence increases as you increase your ground speed, that means you have to turn your legs over faster. That means you have to train your muscles to turn over faster, but that also means you have to fuel your muscles to turn over faster.
Mm.
So if you can learn instead how to keep a nice, steady cadence and learn how to, if you want to run faster, you just lean more and let your stride open up behind you more. So your upper body's always going forward. Your legs are always going the other way. Okay? That's a much more efficient way to move your body than trying to run, you know, letting your cadence go faster and faster and faster, because it really does consume an incredible amount of fuel.
Yeah.
If you're doing it that way. And let me see, any others? I don't know, inefficient uses of the body. Like I said, you know, you can all take it back to technique. You know, somebody swinging their arms across their body instead of swinging them forward, I mean, that's a waste of your time, you know. Or having your upper body sway side to side as you run, you know. Any direction that your body moves that isn't headed the same direction you are is a waste of energy,
mm-hmm.
you know. So if everybody out there wants to think about a ruling idea, a theme, whenever you're out there running, you always want to have as many body parts as possible heading in the same direction you are. So watch your arms. How do they swing? Are they going forward or are they going crosswise? How's your hips? Are they going side to side? Are they moving forward? Do your legs turn out or do your feet point the direction you're headed? Every one of those little things, adjustments you can make, can trim off that much more, you know, seconds off your time.
Right. Right.
So if you want to get fast, it's not all about pushing harder. It's about stopping your leaks, you know. Where are you inefficient? Not so much how can you build stronger legs to run faster, but how can you just get plain more efficient?
Sure. Now, a lot of runners deal with lots of injuries, and a lot of them just accept that that's part of running. So how can one avoid injuries with Qi running?
Well, one is not requiring more of a muscle than can possibly be done safely. You know, It's like people get so in their heads that they want to just push themselves so hard to just get really fast or whatever. And that's mind over body. That's what I call mind over body. That's like no pain, no gain mentality. All right. If you want to train smarter, you want to really learn how to, you want to learn where the maximum amount of your muscles is that you can call upon and stop there. Okay? So you don't do any, like, you don't do super efforts hardly ever unless you really, really need to, you know, get out of a bad situation or something like that. But you know, you want to be using your muscles within a safe range of their, not only their range of motion, but their ability to perform. Okay, so you wouldn't, like I said, try to run a really long run by always pushing off with your legs or especially pushing off with your toes. Okay, that's going to fire calf muscles so much that they're going to run out of electrolytes more quickly, they're going to cramp, and then you're not running at all, you know? So if you just really let the small parts of your body do the small work, let the larger parts of your body do the larger work, then everybody's happy and everybody's doing the job they should. The problem, the way to avoid injuries is to not let one of the little parts do a big job, okay? Then that's an overuse injury. The other one is overtraining. You know, a lot of people just try to train so hard. And you know, a big mistake that I think, and this is just my opinion, but the big mistake that I see a lot of people doing is doing their long runs at race pace. It doesn't make any sense, you know. You want to do shorter runs at race pace. You can even do runs that are three-quarters the length of your race at race pace. But to do all your long training runs, those are there for aerobic capacity, for building your aerobic base. And then you have speed workouts, and you have tempo workouts. You have all these workouts that train you how to run faster, the technique it takes to run faster, not the muscles. Now, this is Qi running technique talking, you know. It's not muscles that'll make you faster. It's your technique that'll make you faster. So if you want to learn to run faster, you learn a fast running technique. And then if you want to get even faster, you can add muscle on top of that, but not until you get your technique down.
Right.
Okay. So if you want to avoid injuries, don't overtax your body. Don't overtrain it. Don't, you know, really be smart about how you're doing. I would say another thing is in avoiding injuries, I would say rely more on technique than strength.
Mm-hmm.
Because if your technique is clean, you can't do anything wrong. You know
right.
what I mean? You're not moving any part of your body in a way it wasn't designed, because that's where injuries come from.
Right.
I start swinging my hips wider than they need to be. I start putting too much weight on some part of my body that's not designed to hold. My feet turn out, and I'm still running forward. You know, that puts an incredible amount of pressure on your medial ligament on your knee, you know. So you want to really clean up how you move your body, and that's what's going to avoid a lot of injuries.
Sure. And, Denny, where can people get a hold of your information, your books, DVDs? Where can people go to get that stuff?
Well, the books are available in any bookstore. You know,
okay.
On Barnes & Noble, and on, you know, they're on Amazon and all that stuff. The DVD is also on Amazon. You can get, but you can go to our website. We have a really extensive website. We have a huge library of articles on all aspects of running, and we have a whole products page, and you can, you know, find workshops and products and DVDs and you name it. Any information you need to find out. And then we have a really good forum that's widely used. And a lot of people just click on there every day just to find out the latest thing that's going on. So it's a pretty good, you know, interactive website, real informative.
Right.
And,
what's your web address?
Web address is chirunning.com, C-H-I running, or chi walking for you walkers, chiwalking.com. And let's just go straight there. There's lots of information there.
Okay. The next question I got for you is that on it's just going to deal with the foot. And so you get some people out there that say you should strike on your heel. And then you say you should strike on the midfoot, and then you get other people saying that you should strike on, you know, the forefoot or the front of the foot.
Right.
So
yep.
you kind of described the forefoot a little bit before. Why don't you just say where you stand on that that topic?
How I stand on the midfoot, huh? No
right
pun
in the middle.
Intended, right?
Yeah,
okay.
Right.
Well, I'll tell you this. The heel strike is definitely, in anybody's book, is real inefficient and dangerous. Okay, if you land with a heel strike, that means your foot is out in front of you. You're landing on your heel. You stand to gain, you know, plantar fasciitis, shin splints, calf pulls, Achilles tendon, tendonitis. You can do iliotibial band syndrome from that. You know, it is just not a good way to land. So if you're a heel striker, figure out how to change so that you end up not being a heel striker. Okay, that being a given, then there's the choice between being a midfoot striker or a forefoot striker. Mostly, I would say elite runners and elite short to middle distance runners run on their forefoot, people who are just absolutely out for speed. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But in order to do that, you have to really strengthen an incredible amount of your lower leg muscles to be even able to sustain running on your forefoot. Okay. So it takes muscle to get that speed. So you do, I mean, but that's why those distances are shorter. You know, those races are shorter. So that if you're going to be up on the ball of your feet, you don't want to be up there for a marathon distance at all. I mean, that would be so hard on your body. And you might be able to do it when you're young, but believe me, you can't do it when you're older. It doesn't work. And so the midfoot, when people say midfoot, well they go, even Romanov said, well, there is no midfoot. What do you mean? When you land, there's not even any foot there, you know? Well, that's not quite correct, you know? The midfoot is really the midsection of your foot. You know, where you tie your shoes, the part of your foot that's directly underneath the bow, you know, is the middle part of your foot. So when you're doing a midfoot strike, you basically land simultaneously on the forefoot and heel. So the whole bottom of your foot is basically in contact with the ground.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And when you're in a midfoot stance, basically, and especially with chi running, when we have people land with a midfoot stance, I tell people to make sure that your entire lower leg is absolutely as limp as you can make it. So there are no muscles firing in that lower leg during your support phase, because that'll guarantee that you're never going to overuse any of those muscles. You know, you can't overuse a muscle you don't use. Okay, so a midfoot strike is really it. When you land in a midfoot strike, your whole skeleton lines up above that. Okay. And you can, like I said, you can watch kids run, especially watch kids run barefoot. And even adults run barefoot. They all land with a midfoot strike.
Mm.
Okay, so it's more of a natural way to run. When I watch the Canyons run, and I got a hold of a video of taken from the press truck at the in front of the San Diego Rock and Roll Marathon. There's a few Canyons in there. And I slowed down that video way slow. And these Kenyans are cruising along at a, you know, 450 per mile pace for a marathon. They're landing absolutely midfoot. They're not heel striking. They're not toe running. They are landing completely midfoot. And they're the most efficient runners in the world. They're also the fastest runners in the world. You know, they also have the skinniest legs in the world. Okay, go figure. They're not using their legs. They don't need big legs, you know. Trying to get that point across, okay? The calves on the Kenyans are non-existent. They don't have calves. Their calves are about as big as my forearm, right?
Yeah.
Okay? They have very thin legs, yet they're winning all the races. How do they do that, you know? You look at a cheetah, the fastest land animal. It's the fastest one, but, you know, it doesn't have big leg muscles like a tiger. It has very skinny legs. It has a totally skinny body, yet it runs faster. Okay, so, you know, it's all, you know, in other places. It's in the core. It's not in the peripherals. So the midfoot strike is more restful on the legs, for one thing, especially if you're just using your legs for a support, you know, and that's it. If you're not using them for propulsion, then they're very relaxed. And so that's one way to ensure that you won't get any lower leg injuries is to land with a midfoot strike.
Sure. Good deal. All right. Let's talk about shoes. Let's talk about which ones you like the most and why.
The ones I like the most for midfoot striking are ones that have less of a heel. Okay, most of the running shoes nowadays just have way too much of a heel. The running shoe companies have been trying to like counteract the impact to the heel of most runners, and they've done that by building up the heels in the shoes higher and higher and higher over the years. To this point, some of them are upwards of like 3/4 inch, you know.
Mm.
Well, if you build a heel up that high, then you're even going to hit the heel sooner than you would have normally if the heel was lower, right? And so my take on that is that if you're learning to be more efficient with your technique, you're trying to work away from a heel strike, which I highly suggest everybody does, that you work towards a shoe that is less of a shoe, because you don't need that much of a shoe. If you land with a midfoot, you don't need any impact control because you're coming straight down on your foot, not coming into a braking position with your foot. You see what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
If your foot is already heading in a rearward direction, so when you land, there's not a lot of impact there. It's just body support. And so you don't need a lot of cushioning. So I run in racing flats, and there are also training flats. You know, you work your way down. You know, people who have a lot of structural problems can start off with a structure shoe, but as you clean up your technique, you graduate to less and less and less of a shoe. And so, you know, like my favorite pair of shoes that I just live in, literally, is the New Balance 790s.
Mm-hmm.
They have almost no heel at all. They're flat. They're so flexible. They feel like Tai Chi shoes. They're very lightweight, and you can go online and get them for like $47. You know, it's ridiculous. You know, you're not paying $125 for these big hotshot shoes. These are great shoes. And, you know, any shoe that is, if you're working on being more efficient and really relying more on the pull of gravity and neutralizing your lower legs and your feet, less shoe is better. I even got sent a pair of shoes. They're called Five Fingers. I don't know if you've heard of them.
No.
But they're made by Vibram, the guys that make shoe soles. Well, these are called Five Finger shoes because they got like five toes in them, and you put your feet in these. And they invented them for people who do boating and water sports, just as kind of a gimmicky little thing. Well, all these ultra runners heard about this, and they start running these ultra long distances in these shoes that basically give you a rubber bottom on your foot. You know, there are no cushioning, no padding, and I've heard of people doing 100 milers in these things.
Mm.
So if your technique is good, there's no impact, so you can run with less of a shoe. And, you know, even one of the Olympics, the marathon was won by a guy barefoot, you know.
Yeah, yep.
So Zola Budd ran barefoot, you know. So, there, you know, less and less of a shoe is better. And if your running form can't support less of a shoe, then you need to work your way into a better technique, and as your technique gets better, you get less and less of a shoe. See what I mean?
Yeah.
And also, you know, make sure the shoe fits, so to speak, you know. Make sure there's plenty of room in the toe box. Make sure it's plenty flexible in the toe box. You don't want stiff shoes. You don't want huge built-up shoes. You know, like I said, less shoe is better.
Excellent. Okay, so what's your take on orthotics then?
Well, orthotics, you know, they're there to kind of, it's one of these things where it's treating a symptom, you know, and I'm more a holistic kind of approach to running and fitness and everything else. And so if I can correct it from inside the body, I'll do that first, okay? If for some reason you've got, like, a major case of plantar fasciitis and you really want to protect that plantar tendon while it's healing, yeah, get an orthotic. But, you know, as soon as you're healed, get rid of the thing, because what an orthotic does, basically, it holds your foot in a certain position. They're not flexible. And that's unnatural to the foot. So if you're trying to heal your foot, you really want to have more mobility in your foot so that when it, say, your plantar tendon needs to repair, you want your foot moving during your healing process so that when your tendon heals, it heals in the longest version that you've got, not the shortest. If you immobilize that tendon, then you're either stuck wearing orthotics the rest of your life, or as soon as you get rid of the orthotics, you're plantar tendon is healed in a short version, and then as soon as you go out, if you're still running the same way that caused the problem, you're going to re-injure it.
Right.
And so you basically, you know, whenever you injure your foot, this gets into injuries, whenever you injure yourself, you want to figure out how you did it, what you did wrong that made you injure yourself, and correct that, correct the cause. Then you don't have to go through all these strengthening therapies and building muscles to correct the weak knee and all this other stuff. You correct what caused it if you can figure that out. And that's what we try to guide people through in the Qi running material, you know. So orthotics are like, they have their place, but don't get hooked on them.
Yeah.
Don't get reliant on them.
Sure. All right. And let's talk about pacing. We were talking about pacing a little bit before.
Mm-hmm.
And let's talk about it specifically for a triathlete and with Qi running and how that all fits together.
Well, I kind of mentioned it before, but, you know, pacing for triathletes, depending on what distance you're doing, if you're doing Qi running, you can change your pacing from what you would normally do if you don't do Qi running. If you do what we call power running, you know, if you're, you know, using strength to get yourself through the run, then you need to save some strength for that run leg. Like, you know, on that blog you just had, that video blog you just had where you're doing these bricks where you get on the bike and then you run and you get on the bike and then you get on the run, you know, and you build all this strength so that when you get off the bike, you can just, like, hit it right off the bat and, like, crank away.
Right, okay. Yeah.
That's strength training.
Yeah. Okay. What's your take on that?
No two ways about it.
Yeah.
Well, my take on that is that you can get the job done in two ways.
Sure.
You can either do it through strength training or you can do it through technique and use less strength training. Okay. So if, for instance, you're pacing yourself on the bike and you're doing strength training like you do, then you're still concerned about, when I get off the bike, I still need to have some of that muscle strength left. I can't totally crank on the bike like I would love to if that was the end of the race when I got off the bike, right?
Mm-hmm.
You got to save some. When you're doing Qi running, if you're not reliant on your legs for propulsion, then you can crank the bike a lot harder. And I've had so many triathletes come back to me and say, in fact, I gave one guy a three-hour seminar to the Golden Gate Triathlon Club, and this was right before the escape from Alcatraz. Okay, I ran into him about 3 weeks later, and I said, how'd you do? And he goes, well, I did a new PR on the escape, and I did the fastest run leg I've ever done. And he says, but I was kind of bummed at the end. And I said, well, what have you got to be bummed about? You know, he said, well, I felt so good at the end of the run, I could have cranked the bike a lot more.
Mm.
And he just felt like the run was too easy. That's a different take. You know,
yeah.
It's a really different take. And that's a big part of why a lot of triathletes really like the Qi running technique as applied to a triathlon, because it really does make it easier on your legs when you get off the bike. So that means you can really fly on the bike, you know. And when you transition from the bike to the run, that's important. In my take on what that training is that you were doing, the difference I would be to do my transition before I get off the bike. When I'm still coming into T2,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to be pulling up on the pedals. I'm going to be not pushing on the pedals at all. I'm
mm-hmm.
just pulling up on the pedals so I can get some blood circulating into those hip flexors. Okay,
mm-hmm.
Start loosening them up, warming them up. And then when I get off the bike, I'm going to be, number one, straightening up my posture. Because I see a lot of guys get off the bike and they take off running bent over at the waist like they're still on the bike.
Yeah.
And that is really hard on your quads. That totally makes your quads have to support your body weight when you take off running. If you straighten up your posture, your structure is supporting your body weight. And all of a sudden just takes all that work off the quads, okay? So straighten yourself up when you get off the bike. Do that first, okay? So when you're going through the transition area, just stand tall, man, you know? And then start with just falling into your run and really start letting the legs kind of transition a little, get used to it. And it doesn't take that long. But really, you know, let your feet come up off the ground, start, and the beauty of it is that you still have a circular stride. You don't want to have a swinging leg. You want to have a circular stride just like you're pulling up on the pedals, okay?
Mm-hmm.
A little bit. And then as you get further into your run, let your lean propel you out of that transition area. Let your lean propel you, not your legs. And then once your legs actually transition into the run, because they won't transition that quickly, once they transition into the run, then you can really work on getting your fluidity back into your pelvis, getting your legs swinging out the back, getting yourself falling forward, using a lot more upper body. And in fact, in the transition and out of the, right out of the transition area, I would use a lot more upper body. Really let your legs have a little bit of space. They just got off the bike. And I would go a little easier on the legs and then just really use a lot more upper body. A big full arm swing, a big full lean. Really let the part that's rested for the last however many minutes get some work done, right?
Mm-hmm.
When you're on a bike, you know, your arms and upper body don't need to do that much, really. You know, they're not totally overworking. So that when you get off the bike, you can really swing your arms. They haven't been moving, you know. So use your arm swing. That's really learning how to mix up your muscle usage so you're not totally dependent on your legs. You want to pull in other helpers.
Sure, sure.
Yeah.
Well, it's very interesting stuff. Thanks for that insight. So, Dana, what's your website again where people can get your information and your DVDs and books and all that?
Yep, it's chirunning.com and chiwalking.com, and that's just C-H-I running or walking. And go on the website. We have a 800 number phone line too, so people can call in. And you know, it's also a good place to find out where a local workshop, chi running workshop, is going to be happening. You know, I'm going to be actually one of the speakers at the multi-sport convention up in Boston this.
Okay,
spring.
Sure. Yep.
That's a big event, and so I'm going to be giving a talk on transition.
Good deal. Good deal.
There.
Well, we got a few minutes left, and we got some people asking some questions on the webcast. You want to answer a few questions?
No problem.
Okay, cool. Actually, Todd here, speaking of chi walking there, you're talking about, Todd here from Lake Zurich is asking, is there any advantage of learning chi walking for a triathlete?
There is, to tell you the truth, because, you know, there's a lot of people that do these walk runs, you know. Or if you're ever on a run, and you believe me, there's times when you just want to walk, right? I mean, you've been out there and you just need to take a break, or you're just so overexerted, you just like need to do it. Chi walking will allow you to keep your momentum but walk. You see what I mean? It's very focused walking. It's similar to race walking, but you don't lock the knees, you know. But it is very energetic, and you're still using the propulsion of gravity and your core muscles more to propel yourself than your legs. And so it is to your advantage. If you do have to end up walking at some point during any event, a long event, and there's, you know, I'm sure there's not just triathletes out there, there's probably marathoners, half marathoners, and ultra runners. So if you do have to stop and walk, you don't want to just stop and stroll or just kind of give it your best shot with walking. You want to know how to walk well and keep it brisk and not lose any of the momentum. Because otherwise, if you just slow down to just any kind of a walk, and then you have to get back up to a running speed again, that's a lot of inertia to overcome. So if you do have to slow to a walk, get into a really nice, vigorous, highly efficient walk. So, yeah, it is good to know.
All right.
Not only that, but the walking is a really good way to learn pelvic rotation. You do a lot more pelvic rotation when you're walking than when you're running, and it's a great way to learn it while you're walking and then move it into your running because it makes your running so much smoother and easier.
Yeah. You definitely see a lot of pelvic rotation and flexing going on when you watch the Olympic walkers. Have you seen that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
If you've ever tried it yourself, and then, you know, the idea is to, if you really want to learn this while you're running, you just start off at a really fast walking pace, really keep your upper body forward and really get yourself walking like a really good head of steam, and then slowly feel what it feels like to have that pelvis rotate, and then gradually just break into a nice, easy jog, but don't stop feeling that pelvic rotation, and you'll feel it move right into your run. It's a
yeah.
cool feeling.
Yeah, and those guys go pretty fast, too, the top guys. So they're,
I ran a 10K once, and a guy beat me walking. He was doing like 7.5-minute pace. You know.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. They're deceptively fast, for sure.
Oh, yeah.
All right, Bob from Miami asks, what are the top 2 to 3 chi running principles that will provide the biggest bang for buck?
biggest bang for buck, lean, and pelvic rotation. I just said them. Yeah, those are the two biggest ones.
All right, good deal. Okay, Danny from Acton, California asks, for someone practicing chi running, do you have any training recommendations or tips for longer distances such as marathon and Ironman?
Well, for marathon and Ironman, what I would say is, you know, obviously you want to have one run a week be a really long distance run. You want to add your mileage on there. But in the rest of your runs during the week, always be working your technique. And, in fact, even during the long runs, do that. And here's how you do it. I set my countdown timer for two-minute intervals. It beeps every 2 minutes, okay? Then I think about one focus or the other. Say I want to pay attention to my posture, and I want to pay attention to, say, pelvic rotation, okay? So I have these two focuses. So my beeper goes off every 2 minutes, and every other interval I'm practicing one of those two focuses for the entire 2 minutes. Okay, so if you're out on a long run for 2 hours, you know how many times you get to practice that technique? Okay, so it's all about allowing your body to learn how to run farther, but how to master your technique in the process. It's not just strength training. It's all about, you know, always thinking about working yourself with your technique. So whenever you're out on any length of run, especially one on your of your long runs, you want to practice that technique it takes to get you through that long run. Now, for instance, on your long runs, if you're doing an Ironman or a marathon, you want to do race-specific training. So if you've got an Ironman that's got lots of hills in it, you want to have lots of hills in your long run. You don't want to just go out and run flat. Or if you're, you know, if your marathon is on paved roads, you don't want to go out and be running trails for your long runs. You want to really, you know, do race-specific training. If there's a hill 10 miles into your race, you want to put a hill 10 miles into your training, you know. That's how you want to do race-specific training so that there's no surprises on race day. Your body is used to having that duress when it comes and how to adapt to it, you know.
Sure. Great. Good tips. Danny also says later on, he gives you a lot of credit for helping him out, getting through his first triathlon and everything like that. So he just wanted to say thank you. All right. David from Dallas, Texas asks, I love some good tips or drills to help me lean more forward when running.
Oh, okay. Well, here's the trick, what you want to do. In order to lean more forward, you need to have stronger core muscles. So in order to keep your posture straight, when you lean forward, you have to be leveling your pelvis. That's what I call the vertical crunch. You want to be picking your pelvis, lifting it up in front. You should be able to feel it in your lower abdominal muscles. So those are the muscles you need to strengthen in order to hold more of a lean for a longer period of time. Okay? So in order to strengthen those muscles, you do abdominal strengthening exercises, but they have to be static. You don't just do sit-ups. You do where you have to hold yourself in that position for a prolonged period of time. And so, you know, one that I do, one that's in the book, is I just lean up against the table or a couch or a park bench and have my quads hit up against the bench while I keep my posture really straight but tilted forward. And the only muscles I'm using are my lower abs. And I just hold that position as long as I can, then I take a break, hold it again, take a break. The other way to learn more lean is to go out on your runs and go through those two-minute intervals. You can do one-minute intervals, you can do 10-minute intervals. But during an interval workout, you hold your lean for the whole interval, and then you back off for like a minute. And then you hold your lean again for 2 minutes, then you back off again, then you hold your lean. And that's like, you know, lifting weights, but you're doing it in the motion in which those muscles are going to be being used. So it's a highly efficient way to train yourself how to not only lean more, but how to strengthen those muscles that it takes to hold more of a lean for a longer period of time. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Yep, makes sense to me.
Good.
Cool. All right. We got Fred Goss in Oakland, and he asked, Danny, I took your seminar several years ago in Berkeley. Chi running has made my running so much easier. I've been running for over 45 years. Oh, nice one.
45. That's a new record.
yeah, it's good. ultra marathon guy, right? Okay. So what do you think about the new line of midfoot strike shoes? I'm using the Newtons. I like them very much, but my right calf tightens up within 10 minutes of running with them.
Yes.
I have no such issues in my regular running shoes.
Right. The Newton shoes are really a four-foot strike shoe.
Mm.
That's why his calves are tightening up, because it puts all those little bars on the bottom. They throw you onto the front of your foot, the front half of your foot, and so that's why his calves, because his calves are firing, because they kind of stick out of the shoe, you know. Danny
yeah.
Absher, the guy that invented those, is from Boulder, and so I've talked to him many times and told him, I said, Danny, if you could make a real midfoot strike shoe, I could sell these things, you know. But a lot of triathletes love these, especially the shorter distance, you know, sprint and Olympic distance. They love the Newton shoes because they get more speed. But you also have to train your leg to be able to stay up on that forefoot, okay? And that's why they're doing that. As far as the other midfoot strike shoes, you know, New Balance came out with a midfoot strike shoe. We helped design that shoe. And it is a good transitional shoe from somebody who's going from regular running or heel striking or power running into the midfoot strike. It's a good transitional shoe, but it's not a shoe that I would recommend people stay in, because it's a lot of shoe. You know, it works for a midfoot strike shoe, but for a lot of people who've worn it for any length of time, it gets a little heavy on your foot. Not heavy, like literally heavy. It just feels like a lot of shoe. And so that's why I say midfoot strike shoes are really closer to the range of racing flats. Yeah.
Sure.
I wanted to bring up a point here about
sure.
this.
Go for it.
When you're running efficiently and your technique is good, how there's less recovery time.
Mm-hmm.
2 weeks ago, I ran the Goofy Challenge, you know, down at Walt Disney World, right? Okay.
Yeah, why don't you just describe that to everyone, what that is.
Okay, the Goofy Challenge at Walt Disney World, because it's down in Orlando. And so they have a half marathon on Saturday, and they have a full marathon on Sunday of the weekend. And so I think if you run the half marathon, it's like the Mickey Challenge, the Mini Challenge. And if you run the full, it's the Mickey Challenge. If you run both, it's the Goofy Challenge, because they figure you got to be goofy to do back-to-back long runs. You know, and but believe it or not, they had, you know, something like 7,000 people register for this race. For the two, okay?
Wow.
Well, I ran the Goofy Challenge. This was my challenge to myself. I want to do this. And I was working the expo floor for 3 days. And those
Ooh.
Were 8 or 9 hour days on my feet. And so that, you know, can you imagine a worse entry into a long distance event, standing on a concrete floor for 3 days? Well, I ran the half on Saturday. And my goal was to run a 140, and I ran a 139. Okay.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So, which was felt fine. I took it easy that day. And then the next day, I went out and ran the marathon in 336. The next day.
Good deal.
And that qualified me for Boston. Now, who in their right mind would want to try to qualify for Boston and run a half marathon the day before?
Goofies.
You know? A goofy person,
yeah.
in their right mind.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't have even attempted that if I wasn't absolutely positive that there was no need for recovery. And there wasn't, you know. And I went running the day after the marathon, and by Wednesday I felt like I hadn't even done anything over the weekend.
Wow.
And that's the fascinating thing about it. And it's not, you know, and that's, we have stories, you know. We have two of our instructors now. Our math, one guy's 42 years old. He just won his age group of the Marine Corps Marathon last year. He's 42 and he ran a 2:34.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And we have another guy who's 60 years old and he just ran a 3:08, won his age group at New York Marathon.
Oh, good deal.
So these are, you know, these are old guys that are like, you know, getting pretty efficient and still staying pretty darn fast. And it's, you know, I'm 59, you know.
Uh-huh.
So that I'm not losing a whole lot of speed, and I'm not doing a whole lot of training. That's the beauty of this. And it's, you know, I just want people to know that's in older guys. Can you imagine the possibilities of younger, you know, if you're well within the range of handling a lot more, you know, speed and distance.
All right. Good deal.
It really opens up possibilities. It's fun.
Sure. Actually, here's a question on kind of
same topic here. Larry from Cedar Creek asks, does the energy expended in lifting the heels pay off in energy economy or conservation?
Well, it depends how you lift the heels. You know, when I'm first showing somebody how to pick up their feet when they're running, there is a minimal amount of hamstring firing. Okay, but we absolutely, the difference is that I don't have people pick their knees up at all, ever. You never want to lift your knees when you're running, because if you do, that costs you fuel, because you're using your hip flexors and your quads. Okay, those are large muscles. So you want to stay away from that. So you never lift your knees in qi running. But when you learn how to do the qi running, you do need to pick your feet up off the ground. So when you're first learning it, you do that by a small amount of firing to the hamstrings. Okay. As you get better at it, like I said, your whole leg is pulled forward by the recoil of your tendons. Well, when your leg is pulled forward by that rubber band effect, your heels float up almost on their own. There's not even any hamstring firing, so I never feel any discomfort or anything in my hamstrings. And so it is really, like I said, it depends how you pick your heels up. You really want to get to the point where you are not picking your heels up. Your heels are being picked up by the recoil motion of your leg. But when you're first learning it, you know, everything has to go through a progressive, you know, through a gradual progression. And so when you're first learning it, you do need to, you know, lift your heels up. But I use visualizations all the time. I pretend like I've got little hot air balloons tied to my heels, you know, whatever it takes so that I can totally relax and let my heels just float up. It's not like I'm trying to pull my foot up to keep the least amount of contact with the ground as possible. Nope. That's not efficient. It might be faster, but it's not as efficient.
Good deal. And we'll do one more question here, and that is from Harry in Memphis, Tennessee. And he wants to know, what do you suggest for warming up and cooling down? When do you recommend stretching and how?
Okay, for warming up and cooling down, it depends on your distance. You know, when I did that marathon, I warmed up for a mile or two. You know,
mm-hmm.
And for somebody running a 5K, you run up for a mile or two, you're going to be out of gas. So you want to really, it's always based on body sensing. That's a big one of the skills that we try to get people to learn in the qi running thing is that learn to listen to your body. So I would say that when you do warm ups, you really want to just run enough so that your muscles feel loose, your joints feel well lubricated, the blood's flowing into your muscles, but they're not overexpended. And then just before you start your run, if it's a race, you want to do a few little light pickups, light surges. But if it's just a warm-up for a run, I just start off in a low gear, what I call first gear. I just start off at a nice, easy jog, and then gradually add in more lean, add in more looseness, add in more lean, add in more looseness. So by the end of my run, I have the most amount of lean and the most amount of looseness. So there's no stretching involved. The run in itself is the stretch, right? Because I'm starting off with a smaller range of motion. That's when I warm up. I have a small range of motion. And so as I get warmed up, my range of motion gets a little bigger. I can lean more, get my range of motion a little bigger, lean more, you know, add that up. And so that at the end of my runs, the only time there's need for stretching is if your muscles are contracted from firing too much. So if I'm really working at not firing my muscles, then there's not a whole lot of stretching to do. I do some stretches if I ever feel like I have a little bit of tension held in my body for whatever reason. Then I'll do stretches, but I never stretch before I run. And if I stretch after I run, I do it specifically to the part that needs to be stretched. That's not to say that I don't recommend stretching. I mean, people need to stretch if you need to stretch. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't just automatically stretch, assuming that it's doing something for me. If I feel in my body that I need to stretch something, I have no problem stretching it. But if I don't feel like I need to stretch, if I'm really loose at the end of my run and my body feels great, there's no need to stretch.
Good deal. Good deal. Well, Danny, thank you very much for coming on the call. And where can people get a hold of your stuff again? And actually, I've got a few people actually asking questions about your clinics. Where can they get information on where you have your clinics and all that?
Sure. Go on the website. It's chirunning.com, chirunning. and you go in there, and there's a bar, a menu bar, and you just click on workshops, and then drop-down menu has a schedule. You just go to the schedule, and you can see every workshop that I'll be teaching in the near future, and you'll also see every workshop that a lot of our other instructors are teaching. So we have over 100 instructors all over the United States, and some in other countries. And so there's usually, you know, a chi running workshop within driving distance. I'm going to be in San Francisco in April teaching a workshop. I'm going to be in New York City March 28th and 29th. So those will be two in Central Park. It's a really fun venue.
Oh, great, yeah.
Yeah, it's a great place. It's a gas. And so we have 2 days there. And then multi-sport convention, I'll be teaching some classes there in adjunct to the being a speaker. So we'll be teaching chi running classes there. So they're all over. Actually, I live in Asheville, and I only teach here once a year.
You're a busy guy.
Yeah, it's so funny. But, yeah, I'm having a class here in the fall, but I'll be around. Just go on the website, look under workshops, and you can find out where they are.
Good deal. Well, Danny Dreyer, thanks so much for coming on the call tonight.
Oh, it's great to talk with you.
Yeah, it was awesome. Great information, and hope everyone else enjoyed it. And we'll see you guys next week at the same time, same place. Take it easy, Danny. Good night.
Have a good evening.
All right. Bye-bye.